हरि ओम सहना ववतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 21, Qualities of Sri Krishna. From 2105, page 44. A subjugator is one who controls the senses. This is illustrated in the first canto, 216. Although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances were all spotless and exciting, and signified deep love, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, other women who approached Krishna with false smiles and glances could not agitate the senses of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.37. Srila Prabhupada. Self-control. A person who can control his senses fully is called Vashi, or self-controlled. In this connection, it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, all the 16,000 wives of Krishna were so exquisitely beautiful that their smiling and shyness were able to captivate the minds of great demigods like Lord Shiva. But they still could not even agitate the mind of Krishna, in spite of their attractive feminine behavior. End quote. Every one of the thousands of wives of Krishna was thinking that Krishna was captivated by her feminine beauty. But this was not the case. Krishna is therefore the supreme controller of the senses, and this is admitted in Bhagavad Gita, where he is addressed as Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. So the interaction is based on affection. That's the whole point. It has nothing to do with their feminine beauty, like that. It's not the mechanical aspect. It's that they have that devotion to the Lord, and that's what's attractive. Then they're approaching him from the conjugal position, so therefore he reciprocates in that conjugal position. So, make sense? Srila Jiva Goswami. Cupid, Madana, was smitten by the queen's smiles and beautiful glances. Hasha, Vridha, Valoka, indicating Pishuna, deep love, Udama, Bhava, which were pure and attractive, Amala, Valgu. The strength of Cupid's weapons, which caused desire, disappeared on seeing the queen's intense love. This means that, being bewildered, he did not use his bow for firing arrows to inflame passion. Samuhya chapam ajahat. Thus it is also said, Bru palavam danur apanga tarang gitani vadaha. Their brows were bows, and their glances were the arrows. Gita Govinda 3.13. This is an image to show the great attractiveness of the queens. Such queens had reached the most excellent position by their display of bliss arising from their exalted prema. Pramadottama. In their group, some women, desiring a position similar to those queens who had a high level of spontaneous prema, could not bewilder the senses of Krishna to the same degree as the queens did, with their smiles and glances, which were somewhat false because of lacking the prema of the exalted queens, kuhakahi. However, they could bewilder the senses of Krishna according to the level of prema. Right? So, depending on their level of prema, then that's the level that they can catch Krishna's attention. Right, so the queens have the highest level here in this example. So they could not reach that because the prema is not there. So it's not that the feminine graces are what's catching the Lord's attention, right? It's the prema of these devotees. So that's then what's being pointed out here, is that his senses are in complete control. So he's only conquered by bhakti, not by anything to do with the senses.
Can we say, for example, and hypothetically, prayer of each devotee can be intensified by association. I'm not talking about the gopis, but for example, those sun ladies and then the queens.
It just depends on what their level of that devotion is. Because the queens are always going to be the queens. The 16,108, it's not that it's up for grabs every time. Like that, or Devaki, Mother Jashoda, Nanda Baba.
Those are fixed positions.
Yes.
And I'm saying that...
So they can be assistants to these queens, but it'll never be the same. Because they're an internal potency. So
I'm talking about the jivas.
The jivas can come up to whatever their level is, but it won't be higher than these queens if they're serving the queens.
Okay. I'm saying that we usually say that our devotion intensifies by good association of those who are more advanced.
Yes, yes, yes.
It means our prema can intensify and become more solid, more Buddha.
Yes, yes, yes. It means it can always intensify and become deeper and deeper, but we always have to remember those more advanced, they're doing the same thing. You know, it's not that at one point everybody surpasses and then the queens are, you know, something. You know, then in the next millennia, then it doesn't talk about the queens anymore because they've been surpassed by all these other like that. So it means that the prema that one has is getting deeper and deeper unlimitedly, eternally. Like that. That's going on. But it doesn't mean that it will be more than those who are following. Like that. Because they are internal potency. They're in that's their position. And we can assist. So. 2107. He is called Stira, or persevering, who works steadily until realizing his goals. 2108. Krishna did not loathe wandering in the forest looking for the Shyamataka jewel, and did not consider fear on entering the cave of Jambavan. Taking the jewel, he returned to Dwarka. Those of steady intelligence persevere in their work until attaining the result. Srila Prabhupada. There was a fight between Krishna and King Jambavan, and Krishna was able to take the valuable Shyamataka jewel from the king. The king tried to hide himself in the forest. But Krishna would not become discouraged. Krishna finally got the jewel by seeking out the queen with king with great steadfastness. 2109. A person who endures difficult but necessary suffering is called patient. Right? It means if you're enduring unnecessary suffering, you know, just because of your own attachment, that's not called patient.
Stupid?
Yes, that's called stupid. But it's not one of the 64 qualities of Krishna here, so it won't be in this list. But yes, we could put it on our own list. That would be an interesting list. Srila Prabhupada. Forbearing. A person who tolerates all kinds of troubles, even though such troubles appear to be unbearable, is called forbearing. 2110. No, 2110. Though Krishna's body was very soft, he did not consider in his heart the intolerable difficulties of living at the house of Guru because of his sincere devotion. One becomes amazed on contemplating the inscrutable character of extraordinary people. Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna was residing at the place of his guru, he did not mind taking all troubles in rendering service to his guru, although his body was very soft and delicate. It is the duty of the disciple to execute all services under the spiritual master, despite all kinds of difficulties. The disciple living at the residence of the spiritual master has to go begging from door to door and bring everything back to the spiritual master. When prasad is being served, the spiritual master is supposed to tell each and every disciple to come eat. If by chance the spiritual master forgets to call a disciple to partake of the prasada, it is enjoined in the scriptures that the student should fast on that day rather than accept food on his own initiative. There are many such strictures. Sometimes, also, Krishna went to the forest to collect dry wood for fuel. Yeah. So it's just, you see, is that there's you're patient because there's difficulties that come up, and then we see here. Yeah, so he's or Prabhupada said forbearing. So it's despite, it's something that should be done, and so therefore it's going on very nicely. So 2:1-11. A person who endures the offenses of others is called tolerant. Srila Prabhupada, forgiving. A person who can tolerate all kinds of offenses from the opposite party is known to be forgiving. Because that's the point, is that this tolerance means that you're forgiving. That's the concept. So when we say that, so it's not an advantage in spiritual life, kind of the modern context of, you always remember these things and you have to get revenge and, you know, there must be justice and all those things. That won't be tolerant. So Lord Chaitanya says more tolerant than a tree. It means the tree is sitting there and doing nothing, and then people come and bother the tree. Right? Like that. So that's the point of tolerance, is that you're forgiving in situations where you don't deserve it. You can say, if I deserved it, okay, then I have to be tolerant. But if I don't deserve it, then why should I tolerate? But that's the whole point, is tolerance means when you don't deserve it. Right? When you do deserve it, then that will be, you know, going through the sufferings and everything that you should go through. So then that would be forbearing. Right? Does that make sense?
As you said, that forbearing, forgiving is the first foremost quality of a Brahmin, which stands.
Yes.
Because of this.
Yes, because they have all this. They have the controlled sense. They don't have that attachment. These things. Therefore, then, no matter what goes on, they're able to forgive, right? But in kind of the contemporary environment, the whole thing is it's a competition who can be the victim. And then try to squeeze as much out of that position as you can for as long as you can. And it's considered okay. And if somebody makes a comment about it, you just reiterate your victimness from a new angle so that they, bring them into submission. Right? So the difficulty comes is that it's not about this quality of tolerance or forgiving. It doesn't mean others are, but it means you are. It's just like Prabhupada, as a devotee was trying to, Prabhupada was talking about this forgiveness and this and that, and then some devotee says, no, but what if, and Prabhupada cut him off, then no, we have to be patient, this, that, but Prabhupada, what if, then he just kept cutting him off and saying, we have to be tolerant, we have to be patient, we have to, all these kinds of things like that. And then after doing that many times, then Prabhupada said, no, but if someone attacks the devotees, then Prabhupada said, then you burn like fire. So that's the whole thing. For yourself, you tolerate it. For someone else, you may. But the modern thing is no, you become the victim and you start, you burn like fire over what, like that.
Yeah. All right. If we speak about this quality and we don't have it, then should we fake it? Or should we...
Fake it until we make it.
Yes.
No, but then the point is what is sadhana? Sadhana is practice. Practice means you're doing something you don't have.
And if we still don't have it?
Then you keep practicing.
Point
is we know this is the thing to do. So as much as we can, we try to practice these qualities. Until our head explodes or something. So you try to do. You know it's better. And so then at the time you try your best, and at times outside of that, then you contemplate, what should I have done? What should have been the thing? What should I have said? All these things. And then with time you start to think about it. It makes sense. And then at some point you're able to remember what you should say. Whether you say it or not, that's another thing, but at least you remember, because in the beginning you won't. Your action and afterwards contemplating it, what you're dealing with are two different things. But with time, you start to remember what you contemplated, and now you have a choice. Do I follow, the better option, or do I not? And sometimes you might, sometimes you may not. But with time, you just keep at that and keep that process, that contemplation. And that practice, then at some point, then it'll start to become more prominent that you're doing, and occasionally then you're not, until you just keep at it, until it becomes the practice. So that's the point, is it's practice. This idea is, it's not real, so we don't do it, but what is real? what is real? So that's the whole point, is that that's why the good qualities and all that are there, because the relationships are more important. So that's what makes it function. Because if everyone's just, you know, being real, then basically you'll end up with Mad Max. You know? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maharaj, in the beginning, we commit offense, because we're coming from a material background. Right. Over a period of time, in spite of the knowledge, it's very tough in the beginning. Slowly, right. Eventually we change.
Right.
But already we have committed the offenses. So how can we overcome that, Maharaj? Of course, sadhana we have to do.
Yeah, so the point is it overcoming the reaction of the offense or overcoming the tendency to create offenses?
Overcoming the tendency to already which we have committed. Already we have committed.
Yeah, so which is more important, that or overcoming the tendency to commit offense?
Overcoming the tendency to commit offense is important.
Yeah, so then focus on that.
Okay.
Yeah, the other one you can say you're sorry, stuff like that.
Already done, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The question is about applying forgiveness. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev advised that if devotee in Tamaguna, we should respect him, but we should avoid his association.
Yes.
And if, for example, someone will remind us or someone other else, should we avoid his association or we should forgive him and...
Well, it doesn't mean we can't forgive and avoid the association.
If we avoid, it means that some separation will be not...
No, the point is it's... If it's just something that just happened, that's one thing. You have a, but if it's that's a nature, that's a tendency that you can avoid. But it doesn't mean that you can't forgive.
Can we forgive and remember?
Can you forgive? I mean, you're remembering how to, see that you don't get into trouble.
Hmm.
But you're not remembering to get them back.
Just in case.
Just in case, yeah. So it's not like 50 years later than we find Eichmann under a rock or something, Yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is that you're forgiving, but it doesn't mean you're not intelligent. Don't put yourself into situations that are going to be a problem. It's not that we go stand out in the middle of the road and let the buses run over us and that we're very forgiving and tolerant and like that. You avoid doing that. Buses are crazy, you avoid them.
In relation to another quality, Jiva Goswami expresses this that Mayavad is to try to also follow these qualities, but ultimately the false show of equality, which is not natural, will cause unhappiness to the person. But a Vaishnava, a pure devotee, by following that quality, expressing it, they become more blissful.
Mm. Yes. Because the point is how will the materialist develop that quality? Right? Unless you perform the pious activity that generates it. And so just being tolerant, that's okay. But what's the principle that is there, that why you are tolerant? Why it's there. So to that degree that that's appreciated, then to that degree it can develop. But generally in the contemporary environment, they don't know these things so much. They just know it's a good thing. And it happens to be good today. Tomorrow may not be good. Any quality, it keeps moving around. So it just depends on the flavor. Like before, the men are tough, the women are very pleasant, like that. Now the women are tough, the man has to be very pleasant. So these things, it'll just change. Before it was, you're confident, you're this and that, but that can't be. You can be confident if you're on your own, but if other people are there, then you have to be considerate like that. So it's just these things keep changing in the modern context. So it's just a matter of why are you like that? Why should you do this? And so for the devotee, then they're doing this because it pleases Krishna. This is the recommendation. So even though they don't have, then they, by practicing that, they'll become happy. While the materialist, then if it's beyond their capacity, beyond their karma, they'll become, you know, disturbed. If they have the karma for it, then it'll work. So you always have to gauge how it's functioning. You know, that's it. You move something at the speed you can handle it. So even in devotion, you move at the speed that you can adjust with it. But at the same time, as you're moving at a slower speed, that means there'll be problems for that slower speed. So you have to be comfortable with that also. So you're going to be uncomfortable. It's just a matter of with what. Does that make sense? But at least the one you're uncomfortable with, the materialistic side, rather than with the spiritual side. So then you'll tend to take up the spiritual more. Is that? Yes.
When we say about tolerance and forgiveness, can we say that tolerance is in the present? Because we are, when to develop tolerance, it is in the present.
Yeah, well, you're enduring the offenses of others, called tolerant. Now, some may be able to forgive them at the same time, but generally they're more outstanding, so we might forgive them after.
Yes, yes.
But the point is, or having forgiven that comes up before, so it doesn't matter, but the two go together. Forgiving means you're tolerant of others' offenses.
Yes, yes. But to be tolerant, it means in the present. It cannot mean the future or past.
No, anything means in the present. You know, any of these qualities means you have to, are applied. So these are all abhidhaya.
Yes.
Like that. You can contemplate in the past what should you have done and what, you know, what you will do, you know, like that. Yes. But it'll be tested in the present. It'll always be tested in the present. Yes. 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 Yes.
This relation that the tolerance is not giving a negative reaction when somebody offends you, but the higher level of that is, even somebody giving a negative reaction, you negative with that offense, you give a positive reaction. Like that's how Bhrigu Muni tests who is the topmost. Mm.
Yes, 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 yes. In other words, when you're looking out for others' benefit, when someone offends you and you get annoyed with that, then the conscience becomes contaminated. Someone offends you and you don't become, then you become benefited. But someone offends and you don't become disturbed, and you're hoping for the other person's welfare that they may, you know, develop. You know, because point is it's due to ignorance and other things like that that people don't act properly. So if they advance in devotional service, these things go away. But that mentality, both you and the other person benefit. Mm-hmm. So like Prahlad Maharaj, then that's his attitude. So that's what makes him special. An example from Shishupalavada, Magha Kavya, 16:25. Though Shishupal criticized Krishna hundreds of times, Krishna did not give any response. Though the lion replies to the thunder, it does not pay any attention to the howl of the jackal. Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna's forgiving quality is described in the Shishupalavada in connection with his forbidding the killing of Shishupal. King Shishupal was the monarch of the Chedi kingdom, and although he happened to be a cousin of Krishna's, he was always envious of him. Whenever they would meet, Shishupal would try to insult Krishna and call him ill names as much as possible. In the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhishthira, when Shishupal began to call Lord Krishna ill names, Krishna did not care and remained silent. Some of the people at the arena were prepared to kill Shishupal, but Krishna restricted them. He was so forgiving. It is said that when there is a thundering sound in the clouds, the mighty lion immediately replies with his thundering roar. But the lion doesn't care when all the foolish jackals begin to make their less important sounds. like that. Yeah, so they'll be in the cave, and so when the lightning is there, then they'll come out and they'll roar. Yeah. 2.1.13. Another example from Stotra Ratna of Yamunacharya. Chai. I'm just saying it seems to be the Australian day to show up. Yeah. Okay. Another example from Stotra Ratna of Yamunacharya. O Ramachandra, best of the Raghu dynasty, you are so merciful to the crow which pecked Sita's breast, but which when offered respects to you, O Krishna. Which then offered respects to you. Footnote 9. Jayanta, son of Indra, took the form of a crow and pecked her breast. And Rama sent his arrow after the crow. The crow finally surrendered to Ram and lost only his right eye. That's good. Yeah, couldn't be worse. O Krishna, so forgetful of others' sins, you gave attractive impersonal liberation to Shishupal, who offended you for so many lifetimes. Tell me that offense exists in him. Tell me what offense exists in him that you would not tolerate. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Yamunacharya praises Krishna's power of forgiveness with the following statement. My dear Lord Ramachandra, you are so merciful to have excused the crow's clawing on the nipples of Janaki simply because of his bowing down before you. End quote. Once Indra, the king of heaven, assumed the form of a crow and attacked Sita, Janaki, Lord Ramachandra's wife, by striking her on the breast. This was certainly an insult to the universal mother, Sita, and Lord Ramachandra was immediately prepared to kill the crow. But because later on the crow bowed down before the Lord excused his offense. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So it seems that in these pastimes, and sometimes this is, Indra himself, sometimes it's the son of Indra. So you'd have different Kalpavedas that they'll do these things. So, in there is also then the crow, he only lost one eye. So that's why you see all crows, even though they have two eyes, whenever they look at anything, they want to look at something carefully, they look with one eye only. Right? You know, it's like, oh, there's something's there, birds will look at it like this, crows won't, they'll look at it like that. It's just, you'll always see, that's how they do it, it's because of this incident. It's interesting. Sri Yamunacharya further says in his prayer that the forgiving power of Lord Krishna is even greater than that of Lord Ramachandra. Because Shishupal was always in the habit of insulting Krishna, not only in one lifetime, but continually through three lifetimes. Still, Krishna was so kind that he gave Shishupal the salvation of merging into his existence. From this we can understand that the goal of the monist to merge into the effulgence of the Supreme is not a very difficult problem. Persons like Shishupal, who are consistently inimical to Krishna, can also get this liberation. Yeah, so he's given something that's so, he's tolerating, and he's giving something that's so valued in the world. Right? It'll be the topmost thing valued in the material world. And he got that, you know, being insulting. So then that's what later comes up, Narad Muni says. So therefore, just anything connection with Krishna will get you so much benefit. So let alone those who actually have devotion, what did they get? Right? Because Shishupal got liberation. So what do those with devotion get? Right? Yes.
Again, question about forgiveness. In Mahabharata, Bhishmadev told to Maharaja Yudhishthira that if your enemies offend you, they will take, if it happens unjustly, they will take 100% of your karma, and if they do it justly, they will take only half of your bad, results of your bad karma. And the question is, when my son was offended in school because he's a vegetarian by his friends, he wanted to take revenge. And I gave him this example. I told that you should not be worried because they already took 100% of your bad karma. And then I thought, is it normal for us, for Vaishnavas, to motivate people to forgive because some offender already took your bad karma? Or we should motivate children to forgive without any reason?
That means you just see what level it is, what works. The point is to get the effect. Does that make sense? So if by just explaining about forgiveness and the importance of that, and they can forgive, then that's good. If not, then you give reason why not. So you start off with what's the standard, and then you come down to whatever works.
Forgiveness in any case will be better.
I mean, unless you're into, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something, then it's better that they forgive. Yeah. Does that make sense?
So, forgiveness is in a good place, but this story gives a scope for the, if we can, as a reaction, we can offer something good for their offenses.
No, this just happens. We don't. From that platform, no, because the point is there's no, it means you have. If it's someone you have a relationship with, you just continue, you know, however is appropriate in your relationship. You know, if any adjustment needs to be made, you make it. But it's not that you have to give stuff and this and that. Because here it's just, all he's pointing out is that Krishna did this. But it's not a matter of that, you know, it was a discussion or it was a plan. Or it's just that you do anything connected with the Lord, you'll go to the Lord. Like that. But if you have devotion, it'll go in that capacity. If you don't have devotion, then you'll go and you'll be liberated. They're just talking about the greatness of the Lord. So it's not a political point here. So this is not a point of niti.
I didn't mean that for the benefit of the person.
But the benefit is Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Mercy.
It's not that we go out and, you know, buy them a Mercedes-Benz or something. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we have to understand. God can do that, we won't. Does that make sense? Srila Jiva Goswami, this is a second example of tolerance. There should be a conclusion after all the insults of Shishupal mentioned in the previous verse, not simply tolerance. Since it is difficult to tolerate loud banging sounds, and thus this verse explains that Krishna liberated him. Right? He's tolerating, you're looking at it, he gave some, but he's tolerating him, but he ended the problem. Hence the liberation. So Jiva Goswami, you know, loud banging, it's difficult to tolerate, but, you know, so they stop. The reference to committing offenses for many lives, Pratibhavam, indicates that Krishna is superior to Rama because Krishna liberated him. Rama just tolerated, but Krishna liberated. So there's an end to the whole thing. It stopped. So that's the point, is that if we're seeing that by them becoming Krishna conscious, then these things will go away, then that's the better position. If we just tolerate that they're dealing like that and it's proper, we do. You know, and less than that, if we're sitting there grumbling and this and that, steam whistling out of our navel and all, but we're able to hold it together, then that's okay, you know.
Yes.
You know. And this thing is that, you know, one thing happens and you go out and wipe out half the city, you know, because of a dog or something, then you don't, that's not quite as good. Okay?
Well, I read the other day that a Brahmin's anger lasts until he has a good meal.
So you're suggesting that his line is feed him.
Yeah,
but that's only if you understand you did something wrong and you offended them. But if you think you were right, then there's a good chance you won't be the one having the meal. But in any case, until the good meal comes along.
The next part was that Kshatriya's anger lasts until the enemy is dead.
Nirvaisha? Because there is no end. It still says on the wall, remember.
And they're still paying.
So you can appreciate that after the enemy's dead, the Kshatriya is not angry anymore, and you can appreciate, yes, that was a good fight, he was a good enemy. And
yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, the whole thing, yeah. Just that. And for the devotee, then they wouldn't get upset in the first place. Like Prahlad Maharaj never got upset. So you see that comes down. Yeah. Two 1 1 14. A person whose intentions are difficult to comprehend is called inscrutable. 2 1 1 15. When Brahma worshipped Krishna by offering the best praises in Vrindavan, Krishna remained silent. Brahma could not understand if Krishna was satisfied or angry with him. Srila Jiva Goswami. The prayers of Brahma had been clearly stated. Brahma could not understand whether Krishna was angry or satisfied with him for offering those prayers.
Krishna was looking silently, not responding, looking somewhere else.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. So I think of this at Brahma, and then you see with Indra, he came with Sarabi because he likes cows. So here's head cow, right? You know, so because if it didn't work nicely for Brahma, how's it going to work for him, right? 2 1 1 16. Another example. Though Krishna, while lifting Govardhan Hill, was intoxicated with the new liquor of Radha's love, even omniscient Balaram could not notice any indications of change. Right? So that's inscrutable. So even, you know, so all these things is that Krishna's doing these pastimes. Even Balaram can't tell. It's like the Brahma Vimohan Leela. He's taken all the cows and calves, right? And replaced them, but Balaram can't understand. Because Krishna's not letting on. He's not going, hey, you know, check out what I did. You know, he's just going on. But after a while, Balaram goes, hey, wait a minute. You know, you can tell something's there. Srila Prabhupada, grave. A person who does not express his mind to everyone, or whose mental activity and plan of action are very difficult to understand, is called grave. After Lord Sri Krishna had been offended by Brahma, Brahma prayed to him to be excused, but in spite of his offering nice prayers to Krishna, Brahma could not understand whether Krishna was satisfied or still dissatisfied. In other words, Krishna was so grave that he did not take the prayers of Brahma very seriously. Another instance of Krishna's gravity is found in connection with his love affairs with Radharani. Krishna was always very silent about his love affairs with Radharani, so much so that Baladev, Krishna's elder brother and constant companion, could not understand the transformations of Krishna on account of his gravity. Because when he comes back with the cowherd boys, he's with Balaram. But on the way back, Radharani's there, you know, and that and the gopis and that, and he Balaram can't tell. Does that make sense?
But the gopis can tell.
Yeah, it's like the girls taking bath in Sukadev Goswami and Vyasadev, then Prabhupada says they have a sixth sense, so they can tell. That's why amongst themselves it means the gopis that are there, other groups may not, their parents won't. Like that. So it's not just because that, but it's just those within the group, they'll catch it.
With the definition itself, gravity is mentioned that who doesn't reveal his plan of actions, but those who are involved in the plan of actions, they know.
That they'll know, yes. Yeah. So then the gopis are part of the plan of actions. So Two 1 1 17. A person who is fully satisfied in his desires, or who is peaceful when there is cause for agitation by control of his mind, is called steadfast. Srila Prabhupada, self-satisfied. A person who is fully satisfied in himself, without any hankering, and who is not agitated even the presence of serious cause for distress, is called self-satisfied. Dhriti, steadiness. means control of the mind. One who is satisfied, spriha, because of attaining all desirable objects, purna, is called purna spriha. A person who is endowed with steadiness of mind caused by being fully satisfied in his desires is called dhritiman. A person is also called dhritiman who is peaceful, shanta, without agitation, by achieving control of the mind, even in the absence of achieving all desires. Right, so whether the desires are there or whether one can't gain the desires, that there's that steadiness. Right? So then that's Krishna's there. That's self-satisfied. Because if you're satisfied in your position, then if there's something gained, then it doesn't change because that becomes part of the field. So you're satisfied with the field. Or if you can't attain something you're trying for, you're still satisfied with what you already have. And then it works. Does that make sense? 2.1.1.18. The fully satisfied person is illustrated in the following. Though Krishna is fond of fame, he gave that incomparable fame to Bhima in the killing of Jarasandha. What remains to be desired by those of superior character? Srila Prabhupada. An example of Krishna's self-satisfaction was exhibited when he, Arjuna, and Bhima went to challenge Jarasandha, the formidable king of the Magadha, and Krishna gave all credit to Bhima for the killing of Jarasandha. From this we can understand that Krishna never cares at all for fame, although no one can be more famous. Right? Because the only point of fame means people think of him, and thinking of him, they get benefited. But it's not about fame mean that he's the one that did it. That makes sense. Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami. Being satisfied in all desires, end quote, will be indicated in this verse by the words, quote, those possessing superior character, lokottara guna shalinam, end quote. Though he is satisfied in all his desires, it should be understood that Krishna actually gave his fame to Bhima because of his unconditional affection for Bhima. Without this quality of affection, all other qualities become worthless. Since a person shows unconditional affection only for those who surrender, the Lord shows unconditional affection for the devotees who surrender unconditionally. The Lord's fondness for fame arises only in order to give happiness to those devotees out of his affection. The devotees gain intense bliss by appreciating that fame of the Lord. Then the Lord transfers his own fame to the devotees. In this way, from his fondness for fame, full satisfaction is accomplished. So for him, it's not about himself. It's about he gains that fame, and then from that he gives it to the devotees. And so then he's, again, on that platform of full satisfaction. So for him, it's not about the fame itself. Like Arjuna, the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra, is Arjuna. So we see all the time Krishna does these things. Or the arrangements on how they were going to establish, you know, the environment properly for the Rajasuya sacrifice. Then the idea for that came from Uddhava. So he gives that to him. So he's very happy to give that fame, because fame is his. He gives that to the devotees. Right? So his self-satisfaction is that satisfaction, that relationship of devotion with the devotees. Right? For the materialist, you perform the thing that you do, then you get, doesn't have the devotional aspect. 2.1.1.19. An example of being peaceful in spite of all agitation. In spite of being rebuked by Shishupala and being praised by the sages in the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice, Krishna showed such steadiness that the kings present could not detect any change in Krishna's appearance. Srila Prabhupada. An example of his not being disturbed was shown when Shishupala began to call him ill names. All the kings and Brahmins assembled at the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Yudhishthira became perturbed and immediately wanted to satisfy Krishna by offering nice prayers. But all these kings and Brahmins could not discover any disturbance in Krishna's person. Right, so he's saying these things, they expect that Krishna will be disturbed, so they want to offer prayers, but when they check, They can't see that Krishna is disturbed. Srila Jiva Goswami. The lack of response on being criticized by Shishupal is an example of steadfastness of mind through peacefulness. Krishna's lack of response also applies to his hearing the praises by the sages. Thus, it is not an example of inscrutability or concealment of feeling, which was already been discussed. The sages were devotees, and thus they would be pleased internally and externally with whatever the Lord did. The difference between inscrutability and steadiness is that in inscrutability there is concealment of feelings, and in steadiness there is absence of feelings. Mm-hmm. Right, because one's unaffected. Yeah. The other one is so many things are there and you can't see that. So in times when there is something, then people don't see it, and but otherwise there's nothing. Like Brahma offered.
Right.
Yes.
Sometimes people tend to praise each other. What should be like proper response? Because sometimes they expect that there should be some response when they praise you.
Then you praise them back. What's the problem? Is it a problem?
Then it's like a game.
That's what the social scene is. So it's just that's what etiquette and those things are. You know, you see the position, it depends on what it is. Somebody's senior, someone's junior, and the junior offers praise, and the senior may or may not. It depends on the situation, who it is, what's their attitude, and everything like that. But otherwise, then, you know, if the opportunity is there, then why you wouldn't reciprocate? You know, but then it doesn't mean that it doesn't, you know, it means someone else doesn't necessarily have to take part. Does that make sense? Two brahmacharis are praising each other of who's the most humble in all this and that. The third brahmachari doesn't have to get involved. He can go do something else like important, like, you know, eat his bucket of halibut or something. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. The kings could not detect any change in Krishna, either of anger or in the criticisms by Shishupala, or of satisfaction at the praises of the sages. Previously, in describing inscrutability, Krishna had feelings of love in his heart, but Balaram could not understand that. In this case, however, neither anger nor joy appeared in Krishna. That is the difference between steadiness and inscrutability. 2.1.1.20. The learned say that a person who is free of attraction and disgust is called impartial. Srila Prabhupada, possessing equilibrium. A person who is unaffected by attachment and envy is said to possess equilibrium. 2.1.1.21. An example from the 10th canto. The punishment that this offender had been subjected to is certainly just. After all, you have incarnated within this world to curb envious and cruel persons. You are so impartial that you look equally upon your enemies and your own sons. For when you impose a punishment on a living being, you know it to be for his ultimate benefit. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.16.33. Srila Prabhupada. An example of Krishna's equilibrium is given in the 10th canto, 16th chapter, verse 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam, in connection with his chastising Kaliya. The hundred-headed serpent. While Kali was being severely punished, all of his wives appeared before the Lord and prayed as follows. Quote, "Dear Lord, you have descended to punish all kinds of demoniac living creatures. Our husband, this Kaliya, is a greatly sinful creature, and so your punishment for him is quite appropriate. We know that your punishment for your enemies and your dealings with your sons are both the same. We know that it is in thinking of the future welfare of this condemned creature that you have chastised him." Srila Jiva Goswami. The Lord does not see with prejudice vision in the manner of, quote, "This is my enemy and this is my son," end quote. The Lord sees with equal vision because he sees differences only in terms of correct and incorrect. He gives punishment to the enemy whose nature is incorrect because he is thinking of the final result. This means that in the end, the Lord gives him the happiness of liberation. In this way, the Lord sees the enemy and his son as equal. It is also seen that fathers give punishment to erring sons. The enemies are people such as Jarasandha, and his sons are persons such as Narakasura. Now he became the son. How he became the son of the Lord during the Varaha pastimes is told in the Kalika Purana, footnote 10. This is a minor Purana named after Durga. 2.1.122. Another example. O best of the Yadus, if your enemy does something correct, you reward him. And if your son becomes spoiled, you punish him. You are the protector of all people and without prejudice. Thus partiality can never occur in your actions. Srila Prabhupada. In another prayer it is said, my dear Lord, best of all the Kuru dynasty, you are so impartial that even your enemy is qualified. If even your enemy is qualified, you will reward him. And if one of your sons is a culprit, you will chastise him. This is your business. Because you are the supreme author of the universes, you have no impartiality. If anyone finds any partiality in your characteristics, he is surely mistaken. Right? Because it doesn't happen in Krishna. Krishna doesn't have that. So this idea is, you know, why is Krishna partial? Why do some people suffer, some don't? And why does good things happen to bad people? That's not, it's just a matter of what's right and wrong. That's what you'll get. So, yeah. Because the ultimate point is moving forward. So doing things right means you're moving forward towards liberation. Doing things wrong, you're moving away from liberation. Right? Does that make sense? So now if you're doing things right with devotion to the Lord, then that moves you forward to bhakti. Right? So that takes you beyond liberation. But at least in the material world, at least they're moving, you know, towards Krishna. That's the whole idea of right and wrong. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not about the individual, it's about how they're moving. Srila Jiva Goswami, the enemy does something correctly, without fault, shuddha, you reward him. And if your son does something wrong, you punish him. Favoritism of either party, paksha pataha, means to favor one party without good reasons. 2.1.1.2.3. The person who is very charitable is called generous, Srila Prabhupada, magnanimous. Any person who is very charitable, charitably disposed, is called magnanimous. 2.1.1.24. The wishing jewel, the desire cow, and the desire tree, being made useless by Krishna, who fully satisfies all the supplicant's desires, serve Dwarka in shame. Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna was reigning over Dwarka, he was so magnanimous and charitably disposed that there was no limit to his charity. In fact, so great was his charity in Dwarka that even the spiritual kingdom, with all of its opulence of chintamani, touchstone, desire trees, and surabhi cows, was surpassed. In the spiritual kingdom of Lord Krishna, named Goloka Vrindavan, there are surabhi cows which give unlimited quantities of milk. There are desire trees from which anyone can take all kinds of fruits, as much as he may desire. The land is made of touchstone, which when touched to iron will transform it into gold. In other words, although in the spiritual kingdom, the abode of Krishna, everything is wonderfully opulent, still when Krishna was in Dwarka, his charity exceeded the opulences of Goloka Vrindavan. Whenever Krishna is present, the limitless opulence of Goloka Vrindavan is automatically present. Jiva Goswami. Yeah, sometimes I notice you put Srila and sometimes you only put Jiva. This is a verse of praise by a professional reciter. Right? So because in the court, then there'll also be all these Brahmins who are professional reciters. So then they're very expert at being able to bring out the glories and everything like that. You know, because they need to be mentioned. One is the kings are inspired, you know, as it said before. It's, you know, when the guy's dead, then he can, oh yeah, he was a great guy. You know. So that, but at the same time, as others have to also appreciate that the king's great. You know, just like sometimes there may be somebody who's a very special personality, but people don't know him. So he may be with a friend and they meet some others and they just deal ordinary. And, oh, have you met him? And you say this about him. And then, oh, okay, then they have to deal differently. You understand? So it's just makes everybody deal properly with the king because there has to be authority. At the same time, is also then the king sees that, you know, he becomes inspired. It's like that. That makes sense. But for Krishna, then it's not, you see before, that being famous and these things, that's not important. Another example, 2.1.125. In each of the 16,108 palaces with their queens, every day at one time Krishna would give in charity 13,084 ornamented young cows with firstborn calves. 13,084. One for these four. Eight is 12, is three, and four is seven. Okay. Who can be equal to him in charity? Srila Prabhupada. It is also stated that while Lord Krishna was living in Dwarka, he expanded himself into 16,108 forms, and in each and every expansion resided in a palace with a queen. Not only was Krishna happily living with his queens in those palaces, but he was giving in charity from each palace an aggregate number of 13,084 cows, completely decorated with nice clothing and ornaments. From each of Krishna's 16,108 palaces, these cows were being given in charity by Krishna every day. No one can estimate the value of such a large number of cows given in charity, but that was the system of Krishna's daily affairs while he was reigning in Dwarka. So 13,000 times 16,108. 21 crores per day. And that was every day. And it's not just the cow. It's decorated nicely,
ornaments.
You know, like that, the ornaments, and it's the first calf. Mm-hmm. So that means then, you know, so many years are there, you know, with that.
When he goes to Kurukshetra, that eclipse, during that time also he was giving from there also.
The same amount? Okay, so just every day he just gave that. So that means when they went, they took all this with them. So they didn't just pack a little overnight bag and Srila Jiva Goswami. The author enforces what was stated in the previous verse by one typical example of charity in Dwarka. The number of palaces is 16 multiplied. Purita by 1,000, Dasa Sati, plus 100, and Shlishta, 8. Grishtinam refers to cows that have given birth to calves only once. One badha is 13,084. Okay, so that's what it is. It's a standard measurement. In another edition, this verse is missing. Okay, so 13,084 is a badha. Jai.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Sama Veta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.